Thanks for the introduction. So my talk today will be quite conceptual, and it's about questions that I find interesting that relate to gravity and space-time structure and the assumptions we make about the quantum structure when we try to approach a quantum theory for it. So I'll start out with some general motivation, and then I'll zone in on an ansatz that concerns interactions between quantum fluctuations. And that is based on two papers, one from last year and a recent one. Okay. And please feel free to ask questions at any point. Okay, so one thing I find interesting is that when we try to understand quantum theory, quantum physics or quantum gravity, we need to do so from a classical point of view. Our expectations of what will be found at the quantum level is colored by what we see and experience in the classical world. So when the most obvious approaches do not work as well as we would like to or as well as we would expect to, then after a while it's motivated to take a step back and ask the question about what assumptions that have been made about the quantum structure that maybe should be reconsidered, and what possible other constructions that one might consider that at first did not seem very motivated. Okay, and basically it ties back to the original problem with quantum physics, the fact that it's highly counterintuitive compared with what we see and the notions that we have before encountering what it is, right? So in that sense, concerning quantum gravity, a reasonable question to ask is what assumptions we make about the quantum structure of space-time and how that impacts not only the quantum theories that we are considering, but also how we regard the classical regimes that we already know everything about. One such question is whether or not a theory of quantum gravity is reasonable to approach in the sense of simply quantizing gravity, or if we also need to consider the quantum structure of space-time, or a quantum structure of space-time, and in what sense, in that case, it would be quantized. So in general, there are like two separate approaches to how one can look at this, and then we have the standard approach, the classical field theory of curvature that we know a lot about, right? And one can look at the field theory and try to see, based on that theory, how it should be quantized, or in what sense it might show interesting physics at the quantum level. And different approaches from that point of view are, as we well know, string theory, the ADS-CFT correspondence, which has been quite successful. And then on the other hand, we have a notion of a macroscopic theory, or well, a quantum level theory that differs from the classical picture that we have, but we don't have really a definite concept of what that would be. It's not apparent how physics at the Planck scale would appear. And there are different approaches again, for example, a discreteness of space or constructions using tensor networks from the connection to entanglement that is visible through the ADS-C duality, with entanglement giving a way of describing different gravity configurations in the bulk, but from the boundary point of view. And then there are also other different ways of trying to approach the building blocks, such as Biasor building blocks, for example, also inspired from ADS-CFT. And I guess you well, course, you've heard about most of these things, and they're quite normal to us, these different approaches. And then from the perspective of whether or not we covered all possible scenarios, it is possible to take a step back and ask what these theories or approaches have in common, and if it might be possible to approach a quantum theory in a different way. And one thing that is mostly common in these approaches so far is that curvature is supposed to be the defining thing, right? Where the interesting physics happens. And one way to see that in a very apparent way is the way we treat validity regions of the curvature, the effective theory of gravity, the Einstein field equations. When we extend the Einstein field equations past black hole horizons, for example, we assume that the effective theory that we have of curvature is all that we need to consider. And reasonably, from an effective field theory point of view, one can argue that such a theory should know about its own validity regime, and therefore, since there is nothing happening at the horizon, there should be nothing new happening at the horizon. But one can also ask the question if the separation between curvature and a space-time structure that is present and possible at the classical level is equally valid at a quantum level. Because curvature is intimately coupled to space-time. I mean, separation is not necessarily very well defined at the quantum level. And then, in such a perspective, one can ask if there could be some new physics or some new constructions in the system that might partly be attributed to the flat spacetime or flat spacetime properties. And again, in general, this is just an attempt at trying to analyze the assumptions that typically are made. I'm not saying that there necessarily needs to be any new or different physics. It's just interesting from a conceptual point of view to take a step back and look at the different approaches we have and what the assumptions are that we are making. Because typically we do make a lot of assumptions that are based on what we expect to find, and that does not necessarily tie in what the reality of the world is in general. So to cover all possible scenarios, some questions to be addressed regarding the quantum system, quantum structure, for example, is if what we need to look at is space-time, or if we can just look at the gravity picture when trying to understand quantum gravity. And also the question of if the theory you expect to see will be discretized or emergent, right? So in comparison, when extending a classical field theory past the horizon, then we're assuming that gravity is what we're looking at and there's no extra physics coming in. When considering some space-time, there is typically a discretized assumption about the way space-time appears at Planck level. For example, considering quantum in the sense of quantized energy levels, but instead the space-time regions that can't be looked at as continuous at small scales, right? But for gravity, we also have the notion of the ADS-CFT correspondence, right? Where the theory of gravity in the bulk is in some way emergent through its duality to what happens on the boundary, where there is no gravity. And that is an example of then an emergent theory where something that does not have a specific feature still effectively gives rise to it. And that is something that I find extra interesting, the sort of slight disregard of emergent space-time theories that that exist so far in the different approaches that are available. And if someone knows exactly why that is, I would be interested in hearing if, well, if there is a good reason for why emergent space-time is not really discussed. But one could just naively consider a scenario where space-time, which we, I mean, it's a concept that we're very familiar with, right? We see it every day, we assume it to be in a certain way, and therefore it's also easy to assume that it needs to be the way we expect it to be from the classical regime. But emergence can also be like, in some sense, that what happens with temperature, right? There's a there's an emergent theory of temperature from kinetic energy theory at small scales. And in the same sense, other concepts could also be emergent, for example, space-time. So one relevant question to ask could be if space-time, as we know it on the classical level, could be emergent from a system that is in its nature different at the quantum level, and then ask the question if that can be found valid or ruled out. I mean, because theories are really only interesting in the sense that they can be checked, right? Okay, so then one can ask the question of what would we, where would we even begin? What could it possibly be if we were even to consider such a strange feature as emergent space-time? Again, this is speculative, right? So then the question would be of how much of the classical structure we see is an effective theory with a different origin. And again, considering a quantized, a discretized space-time would be one type of approach. And in some sense, we do expect there to be some structure at the quantum level, right? And then the question of whether or not it would mess with the gravity theory is another question apart from that. But just looking at what a quantum origin could be, there is more to just quantum theory than the existence of discreteness or energy levels. Quantum theory is also a lot about interactions and what can be observed. In many ways, when we, well, when, in terms of quantum physics in general, it is restrained by what we can observe through measurements, because it's so, well, it's unintuitive from a classical viewpoint, and so what we have to restrict the theory is observations. And in that sense, interactions can be a useful handle or something that that can be well defined in as a sub-element introduced in a theory. And so in this ansatz, we will consider if there can be a quantum space-time structure at the quantum level in terms of interactions between particles, and if that would at all make sense. Okay, and that those are two choices. What level new physics would appear at and how, right? And then based on that, we have the question of how could such a theory even be formulated, right? And space-time, again, is with curvature a very complicated problem, so an easier question to address would be simply how space could possibly be understood from an interaction picture. And space, for example, in three small d dimensions, right, is mathematically a very well-defined concept, and it requires two different notions at the very least, and that is concept of length and a scalar product. We don't really have a good definition of what our space is, but with it, we do have a description. So how could, the question then would be, how could these notions possibly arise from interactions, and could they, to begin with? And I'll zone in on the scalar product, because it's quite a hands-on example that is interesting. So based on interactions, the best emergence of a scalar product that one could see would be a statistical average, right? And in interacting with particles, we would then be happy if there were such a connection between particles, so that we can, you know, probe a particle pair that is connected in some way, and find the relations or outcomes of the measurements that give us a statistical average overlapping with a scalar product when we keep the measurement directions with a relative fixed angle in the classical sense, right? Just like here. This connection is not a priori something that would exist, right? But fortunately and interestingly, it is easily given a hand by spin one half entanglement. I don't know if that is obvious based on this one. It might be for the photon linearization, but otherwise it's quite easy to recast the probability of spin one half overlap in terms of A dot B. Okay. For example, yes, that is what the spin one half would give a hand, right? It's simply A dot B in three dimensions, whereas photon linear polarization would give a two-dimensional notion of a scalar product. Is that? Okay, so you no. So just based on if there is a connection that could possibly give a scalar product in three or two dimensions, then with a spin, a fully entangled spin one half pair, right? You can separate them and interact with and measure them in different directions, the spin, and if you keep the measurement directions with fixed relative angles in the two different measurements, right? Then the probability of measuring up or down, I mean, the overlap will follow a probability distribution that is possible to recast as A dot B. Yes, exactly. So the question initially would be if interactions can exist, or if we do have interactions that could fashion something like that. And then the answer to that is that yes, we do have these connections between particles in terms of a full entanglement between spin one half particles or photons. They've been produced in pair production, or if they have been fully entangled in some other way. But the statistical average is observed. So in that sense, we do have a type of interaction which can connect, you know, which can construct the connection that would be required for an emergence of a scalar product. Something you can buy? Huh?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Okay. So. Apart from, I find this interesting in two ways. Partly that we do have interactions that actually can give this as a statistical average, which is interesting enough in itself. And secondly, that this interaction is something that requires entanglement. And entanglement, of course, is interesting since it's connected to the boundary theory of the agency of duality. In some sense, the emergence of gravity is known to be related to entanglement, so it's somewhat promising that an interaction picture would also require entangled particles in order to give rise to space-like notions. And then one can consider, continue to theorize again more on what entanglement would be useful for creating notions related to space and space-time. For example, then spin entanglement for scalar products, it's quite easy to actually at least guess a connection between the pairs of position and momenta in comparison with length, and another pair of observables with complementarity, of course, is time and energy, which then again, possibly in some hypothesis, could be connected to energy levels in a gravity potential and the time experienced in the local system at a certain potential. And one thing to do here could be to elaborate on how such an emergence could how such an emergence could arise, and the statistical picture that would be required to possibly get an effective theory with a scalar product, a length, and eventually time, and so on. But its second mode of approach is simply to consider if such an ansatz could be consistent with what we know, because suddenly we have introduce some interactions in the picture, and that could possibly change the way we view things at the classical level. So, moving on, well, starting with some more details on what one naively would think of at, well, at the statistical level, I'll later move on to a consistency check, if the type of origin could at least could at all be considered realistic. Okay, so just naively, how could we picture a statistical emergence of space or space-time? And an interaction origin would build on information exchange, and that is a new feature that would be introduced in a theory that's not really something that we classically expect to exist on the quantum level. And the emergence would be effectively a statistical effect. And with any statistical effect, an equilibration towards an end configuration would require some sort of equilibrating entangling process. For example, in the example of spin entanglement. If entanglement between spin would be considered to give rise to an effective scalar product, which in some way would connect particles and give a statistical picture of space, then in some way entanglement between particles and how they entangle with each other in consecutive entangling processes can't be an entirely random process. I mean, consider, for example, spins on some lattice with just a random outcome of pair entanglement or entangling processes. The system would turn chaotic after a while, right? So any statistical effects that that are not chaotic would require that spins, fully entangled spins that split and meet up with each other would entangle in a way that is predefined, or at least to a large extent determined by their initial configurations. And that is not a priori something that necessarily is true, right? From a classical perspective, when we measure spin and perform consecutive measurements that are orthogonal to each other, the complementarity means that we just can't predict what the end results will be. But in some sense, for an equilibrating process, the end result of entanglement would have to be reliant on the initial configurations, or we would just introduce some, there would just be a randomness introduced in the system. So that's something that would be required. And secondly, I mean, an issue as well, right? And secondly, in recasting space-time as emergent from interactions in a, you know, pure hypothesis, then we would also just like to have some rough picture of what the emergent space-time effectively would arise as, right? Because we have the bottom-up picture of trying to just get mathematical notions of space based on interaction. And then we also would like to sort of get some feeling for how the statistical average could appear on a larger level or a larger scales. And just naively, one could consider definitions of the passage of time and distance in terms of frequency, because at interaction level, the only thing, the only handle we have on interactions really is interaction frequency, and is not entirely disconnected from our classical notions of time either, because just looking at what we could substitute time with in terms of frequency at the classical level, we do have a very well-defined notion of what time is for example, atomic clocks, in terms of decay rate determining how much time that has passed in the local subsystem. And in that sense, time could intuitively be replaced with a total interaction frequency of a particle, and distance could be substituted with some frequency of interaction between particles in combination with a set velocity for set speed for how quickly information is communicated per unit time, right? Which is an intuitive picture. And again, considering such a picture would also be considering a structure reliant on a vacuum, on structure in the vacuum, right? On quantum fluctuations, because that is the only thing that in such a scenario could support structure, right? And yeah, naively one could consider, for example, a Gaussian profile for the interactions between particles, not the total interaction, but the relative distance interaction. It's useful for various reasons, but it could be, you know, one could look at different configurations and try to determine what interaction profile might be interesting, and such a profile is the Gaussian profile. And in that case, one might consider a statistical average where the norm and the variance of those individual interaction profiles would set the metric in relation to some asymptotic vacuum, for example. Okay. So that is that is basically how one naively could picture a statistical emergence of the classical picture that we see of space-time. But then we have the more pressing matter of the fact that the ansatz that we made really introduced some new physics in terms of information exchange. And that is something that probably really messes with validity regions, right? Because suddenly there would be new physics in the setup. Basically, because an interaction origin, if we would make an ansatz of space-time as emergent from interactions, then that would require a reliance on information exchange between particles. And the statistical effect, while it's sort of sanity check that we might be able to understand space-time from a statistical average, an information exchange origin would be far more drastic and something that would be different. Again, we're playing with a hypothetical origin, just basically to take a step back from the standard considerations that we make about space-time to see what alternative origins or physics that we could consider, just in order to make a sanity, to perform a sanity check of if there could be different processes that we could consider that are not intuitive from a classical point of view, sort of in taking a step back and analyzing how our classical expectations color what we expect to find at the quantum level and alternative solutions that we could possibly look at. Okay, so an information exchange origin would mess with two immediate things. And the first thing is that there would be new physics at the black hole horizon, not due to the gravity theory, but because in this ansatz, there has been new physics introduced even in flat space. So in that case, it would be an example of the question mark if the fact that we can separate curvature from flat space time at the classical level, and if that is still valid at the quantum level, which we traditionally do assume, but which a priori might not be necessary or required, right? It's definitely not what we would expect. And it's not necessarily true, but it's something that we can consider in the process of looking at the assumptions that we make about quantum structures based on what we expect from classical theory, while we know that those classical considerations often are misleading at the quantum level. So just in looking at such an alternative scenario, we're making an ansatz of an interaction origin of space-time instead of just a discretization of space-time in the absence of curvature. And then there would also be additional structure in the classical flat space-time. And while new physics at the black hole horizon, I mean, that can definitely be, you know, discussed, but not very thoroughly analyzed. We do not know very much about what happens at the black hole horizon, so we can't really rule anything out based on that. But additional structure in the classical flat space-time should definitely be something that we can rule out immediately. Any such consideration should be easily disregarded, right? Basically, an information exchange origin would not only, I mean, since any such effective theory would depend heavily on information exchange, the feedback loop between how particles communicate with each other, that would not only be disrupted at a horizon, but it also would be affected by anything that would obstruct information communication, right? So even in approximately flat space-time, where we can introduce apertures, for example, or any type of matter that doesn't curve the space-time space, enough to give considerable effects so that we can consider flat spacetime, then still we would expect some effects purely due to the information exchange origin, if there were such a thing. Okay. And of course, the scale of any such thing would be unclear. But the interesting part here is that we started from an ansatz on interactions giving rise to emergent spacetime. We see that there would be additional structure in classical flat spacetime due to that. Based on that, we should easily be able to rule that ansatz out. And still, when we look at the additional structure, the effects conceptually overlap with something that we actually do have, and that is particle diffraction. Okay. So in flat spacetime, of course, we do know what that is. We do know that we do have a good description of wave particle duality and so on, and I'm not trying to explain that in any way. But it's just interesting that starting from a naively strange emergence consideration of space, which would give, you know, a change of how we look at the classical flat spacetime theory, that thing, the change in a theory that we know so much about, should give us the opportunity to discard such an ansatz out of hand quickly. And still, what it does give us is something that overlaps with something that we do see. So simply, from that point of view, I find that interesting, right? It's pure speculation, of course. Okay, so in general, I think that we should just make sure of what type of quantum structure we expect to find or we expect to exist, if it is gravity only, or if there is some part of the structure of space-time that might mess with the quantum gravity theory that exists, which is not necessarily so in any way, but there is certainly a feature of many approaches that means that we're classically looking at gravity, seeing that we can forget about flat space-time effects and just treat the curvature theory. And then when quantizing that theory, we still assume that we can forget about flat space-time effects. That might well be true, but we can also ask the question if it's thoroughly motivated, and it should be easy to rule out extra effects, like since we know so much about the classical flat space-time theory. So there haven't been many questions, and I hope you do have some, but I will just summarize what I've been talking about, and then I hope you have some questions after. So basically what I've been talking about is how we conceptually approach the theory, a quantization of gravity and space-time. I find it relevant to look at the assumptions we make in creating a theory and considering if we're making too many assumptions and if there are other effects that might or might not be present in a full theory, especially since it's not trivial to find a theory of quantum gravity. And one such instance is what space-time is at the quantum level, if it's simply discretized, or if there might be some emergence of the space-time that we see not only in terms of discrete to continuous, but, for example, interactions to a continuous space-time that we were used to seeing. And again, so far, such an origin would be pure speculation, should be treated as such, but yeah, I find the conceptual discussion interesting. And in general, just without having a complete theory of quantum gravity, it is relevant to look at the assumptions that we make and ask if they're reflecting an accurate picture of what could possibly exist, even outside of what we consider from a classical space-time. Or a classical space-time, I mean, the notions that we form of the theory based on what we know from classical space-time. Okay, so thank you for listening. And any questions?
And there are extra structures. You mean extra structures that would be visible in a macroscopic way, or at least in the LHC or something like that? If so, what kind of structure do you have in mind?
No, structure in terms of, for example, particle diffraction.
The particle diffraction is, I don't understand how that's a structure, for example. I thought you meant like new fields or new.
Oh.
New kinds of interactions or something to add to the metric of space-time as an extra space-time structure?
No, I'm not.
Fifth force? I mean, that's not what you mean by.
No, I'm not talking.
Extra structures?
No, I'm not talking about particles in the sense of gravitons. I'm talking about if one might. If it would be at all consistent to look at the scenario where space-time, I mean, the directions that we see. Space and time, not particles themselves, but the existence of continuous directions and passage of time, if that could possibly be understood as some emergent phenomenon from interactions at a quantum level.
That's the program of effective space-time, but then this previous slide you said something like it could be ruled out because of these new structures.
Well, yes, because.
Is an example of the new structure diffraction? Is that what you're saying?
It would be.
But that's an old structure. So
yes.
Are you saying diffraction would change? Or would be different rules of diffraction? That's what I don't understand.
No, I'm saying that if making an ansatz of an interaction origin, we would expect flat properties that coincide or at least are very similar to particle diffraction. So it's not possible to rule it out. I mean, we introduce new physics in considering this, so it should, and it, with effects in flat space-time, so it should be easily ruled out. But the thing is that something exists that is quite similar to what the effect would be.
Okay, can you explain why diffraction is a structure that is specifically associated with these?
Well, so any. So I'm not saying that diffraction is associated with it. I'm saying that such a structure could arise from it. And that. Yeah, so that basically is saying that when. So if we consider a space time that is built on quantum fluctuations in the vacuum, for example, then lines of shortest path of interaction would need to bend around regions that are. Either interacting more slowly or which are blocked, not only because of curvature, but because the information exchange would be altered in those regions, right? And that is an effect that could be similar to particle diffraction. I mean, because basically when we're talking about flat space is trivial compared to curvature, but we don't have any notion of really what the flat metric is set in relation to, right? There's plenty of things that could fit within a flat picture because we have diffeomorphism invariance. And a part of diffeomorphism invariance is that we can just choose what coordinate system we want, but another part is also whether or not the structure is set in relation to something. So in that case, one could consider flat field lines, for example, being set in relation to apertures, for example. Okay, so just a short example, a picture. I mean, yeah, that's an addition. Okay, so if we used to consider naive trivial flats based on structure, we would just have trivial straight lines, horizontal and vertical, right? That would naively at least be a flat space, but or a flat space. But we can fashion structures that are flat in this flat definition sense that are not necessarily trivial in terms of straight lines in x and y here. So for example, if one would consider a slit opening from one to two and then a mirror image in the other sense in one half plane, one example of a flat metric would be this, what is illustrated. And it's still a flat metric, at least in the upper half plane, right? But it's not a configuration that we would expect to be there if a blockage to information exchange would not be relevant. Because if there would not, I mean, this is assuming that there is something relevant with blocking something from one to infinity. If there wasn't any relevance in that blocking, then we would just expect a trivial configuration, right? So that's an illustration of how something could be flat, but still not be coinciding with the trivially flat, if that makes sense.
I'm not certain that I get it or not, but
okay.
Because we're so used to thinking general covariance principle, or whatever you want to call it, if the metric is flat, it's flat. But let me ask one last.
Okay.
So, what's the role of time in this picture, this nascent picture that you have? I mean, particle suggests, if you really mean particle, then it suggests something that's extended in time, but localized in space.
Mm-hmm.
So if you presuppose that, is there a notion of the background notion of time already entering in? In other words, you're recovering spatial relations but not temporal ones? That's the question.
Yeah. So temporal ones could be recast in terms of interaction frequency of particles.
But those words, frequency, interaction, and so on.
Yeah.
What's the underlying physical picture? Do you have a notion of, do you have a parameter time, like will you write down a Schrödinger equation, for example? And so it has a T in it, so what is that T, a built, you know, a fundamental input to the theory? I don't know if you see what I'm asking.
Yes, so one issue with trying to discuss emergence of spacetime is that we like to put it in a picture where we already have a reference frame that is spacetime, right? But I'm not entirely convinced that putting it in such a reference frame is the same as postulating that we have time, although in some sense the system needs to display time. I mean, we do need a reference system to discuss passage of time, right? As we do need a reference system of position to sort of think where particles are.
That's true. Classical GR doesn't have such references. And it has a notion of passage of time.
Yes. So
I'm asking this because a lot of these theories in which there's an emergent space is not an emergent time. Seems like a funny retreat from, full covariance.
Yes.
I mean, matrix models, for example. A lot of these models tend to have something like a Schrödinger equation. They don't have ordinary space. So you say particles interacting. But I'm just wondering what formal framework is presupposed by that. If one tried to actually make a concrete model of such a theory,
yes.
Would you have time as an input?
So I would prefer to have time as something that shows up from the theory, from the interactions, rather than being presupposed.
But when you say interactions, how do you express interactions? I mean, what are the basic variables?
Well, the basic variables, in terms of atomic clocks, for example, a clock time can be defined from how an atom interacts with its surrounding, if it's the right reliable kind, right?
Sure, but yeah. In that case, we have the space-time already.
Yes, but then the question. Yeah, so that could be a hen and the egg question, right? Which one comes first?
So you think some notion of.
I think.
Instruments like clocks is going to be a basic part of this.
So in a statistical average picture, which this would be, then one might naively think of it as having an analog in hydrodynamics or something with a microscopic fluctuating environment, right? So we could naively consider a scenario where at small scales we have something that isn't a defined continuous time, right? But multiple particles that interact in ways that are different from one another. I mean, in continuous time, we sort of assume that particles that are close to each other also interact in a way which is continuous. I mean, we wouldn't have a discreteness in terms of something interacting very quickly right next to something interacting very slowly or seldomly, right? But on a small scale picture, one might consider a theory where there is a certain randomness between how neighboring particles interact, but on an average, giving a defined notion of what a passage of time is. So one could naively consider such a thing. Does that make sense? Roughly?
I get a feeling from it.
Yeah.
If you ask me to write down any toy theory that showed the idea, even if it's not physically quite right, I wouldn't know how to proceed. I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Do I write it on the ground? What am I supposed to do?
So I don't think the right thing would be to proceed in writing a theory for it. I think a good thing would be a consistency check of if it at all is reasonable.
Say it again. I didn't
hear. I don't think that a good way to proceed would be to write down a theory for it. Yeah. But the best way would be used to make a consistency check if it's at all reasonable.
Okay. So how do we make consistency?
Yeah. So that. One of those things would be the classical features that would show up, right? Could classical effects even be interpreted in terms of particle diffraction? Or at least that's a question that I would ask to begin with. Because if it wouldn't overlap with particle diffraction, then there's no really any reason for considering the type of origin to begin with. Because it would come with physics that we don't see. Yeah.
Does anyone else have a question?
Yeah.
You mentioned about flat space times. Mm-hmm. Do you rule out those theories which will add additional structures in flat space time, or you do not? Like for those theories which would add additional structures, let's say you start with some interacting theory,
mm-hmm.
and then you take the flat space time limit, and then you see that the additional structure.
Mm-hmm.
Does it rule out those theories?
Which theories?
Interacting theories. Interaction.
You're saying that if we see the things that rule out the interaction picture?
If you see extra structures, what do you rule out?
What do I?
Rule out.
Rule out. So any extra structure would, of course, need to fit within the classical flat picture, right? Otherwise, it could not be consistent with what we observe at the classical level. How to rule it out would be, for example, if particle diffraction has this feature of intensity peaks, right, at wavelength level. And that's something that, in a wild guess, could possibly, be interpreted in terms of a preference for certain angle deviations for a particle passing through a space-time and sampling the structure that is forward, for example. And that, but it's not necessarily true that it could actually infer such a structure as the one we do observe, right? What I can say, sort of, is just that any structure that would be emergent would have to be consistent with what we do observe, because flat space time is something that we do know. Everything we think we need to know about. Okay. So any extra effects that aren't well known, those would be very strange indeed.
One last question. If that is not the case, Anna will be here until tomorrow, roughly noon, and then let's think again.